It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, and of course, our show is also on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And hey, if you guys appreciate what we do here, you guys should know the drill by now. Do me a favor, subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts, please subscribe to us, drop us a review. I do read every single one of those that we get. I sincerely appreciate them. Leave us some stars. That would be awesome as well. And above all else, please share the podcast on all your social medias. Just even a retweet would be huge. I would appreciate it. It would mean a great deal to me. Now, for today's show, we're going to do it a little bit differently because I had a really great conversation with Keith Smith, you know, a guy who's, you know, been around the game for so many years, and he's written for Yahoo Sports, for Real GM, for Slam Online. He covers the Celtics for Celtics Blog. I mean, you name it, he's probably written for it. Great basketball mind, great insight. And, you know, our conversation went a little long, so I'm going to stretch it across two episodes. So we'll do part one today and then part two tomorrow. And if you're not already following him on Twitter, I highly suggest you do. He's one of the best follows on NBA Twitter. You can find him at Keith Smith MBA. So definitely go check him out. Check out some of his written work. He also pops up on podcasts, radio all the time. So definitely go check him out. Give him a follow. But I'll stop talking. I'll stop wasting any time, and we'll just jump straight into our conversation with Keith Smith right now. How's it going today, Keith?
It's going good. You know, we're sheltered in place here in Central Florida, but we are doing our best to stay in and stay away and do our part here as the Smith family.
So before we get to our like heavy hitting topics for today, I should say, just kind of what are you guys trying to do as a family to kind of pass the time during this, you know, NBA season hiatus and all the shelter in place and everything that's going on?
Yeah, you know, it's been really interesting. Last week, our daughter was on spring break, so that was kind of planned to be home quite a bit. And we obviously had to cancel some of our activities that we're hoping to go out and do and run around town. And living in the Orlando area, thankfully, we're in the theme park capital of the world. So we missed out on a little bit of that, but it was, you know, for very good reasons. Now, today, we're just really kind of doing our best to stay in. We're working on, she got for Christmas, she got the giant Lego Hogwarts castle. So we've been working on that. And then today we just got a new puppy, a literal 8 week old puppy. Today was the day she could go home, and she came home with us. So that's keeping us very, very busy already.
Oh, absolutely. Well, first off, I'm jealous of the Hogwarts castle, and I'm also jealous of the 8 week old puppy. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, right. The Smith House is kind of the place to be for doing your social distancing, I guess.
There we go. All right. Well, so first thing, you know, just a little bit of background on you. So how did you kind of get into covering the NBA? Where did you really get your start?
You know, I fell into this kind of backwards, like I think some of us did. I've loved the NBA my entire life. I just took to the game of basketball at a very early age. I grew up just south of Boston, so I grew up on the 1980 Celtics, Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, that group. So it was very easy to fall in love with that particular group of players. So I am, that's what I grew up on. And then getting started, I really got my start writing at realgm.com. I was somebody who posted in their forums a lot. I became a forum administrator. I had done some stuff for them on kind of the back end type things there. If you've spent any time on RealGM, it's a very extensive and expansive website. It's for for basketball completionists, as we like to say over there. And then as more well-known writers like Shams Charania and Danny LaRue moved on, that opened up the opportunity for folks like myself. So I jumped in. I did some writing there. And then from there, I moved on to covering the team I grew up watching, the Celtics, with Celtics Blog as part of SB Nation. And then since then, I've worked for Yahoo Sports, now NBC Sports. I've done some work for Slam Magazine, and just, you know, kind of bouncing around, doing everything I can to stay connected to the game I love and cover it in a way that I hope fans really enjoy.
You know, I've thrown this question around before to certain people, and I always find the answers to be kind of varied and interesting. But I think that when it comes to like sports journalism, in a sense, there is inherently a little bit of bias compared to, say, regular journalism, where you're supposed to remove yourself from whatever's going on, just present the facts, let readers kind of draft their own opinions of what's going on, that kind of thing. But with sports journalism, because inherently we're all sports fans at heart, we have a passion for the game, we enjoy, you know, what we're covering, what we're writing about, you know, do you think that it's kind of hard at times to maybe take off the fan hat as, you know, somebody that's a member of the media and kind of reporting on a team or, you know, teams, you know, the NBA at large? Do you find that to be difficult at times, or do you think that kind of enhances your ability to cover the league?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, actually. I think it does enhance my ability. I think anybody who reads anything that I write should hopefully come away with the sense of, even if you disagree with what I'm writing or saying, that I love the game. And that I want to always come through, because that is something that is very, very true. And that's something that, you know, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't love it. I had, before I started doing basketball full time, I had a job for nearly 20 years with the Walt Disney Company. And I loved doing that. So it wasn't a case of, this is what I had to be doing. I do this because this is what I love. This is the thing I enjoy most. And then from there, you know, as we go on, I think one of the things that has helped me is, I don't live in the market of the team I cover, being the Boston Celtics. So I'm not caught up in it day to day like people are there, where it's kind of that constant drone of talk radio and the newspapers, and that's every conversation and those kind of things. And the team I live closest to, the Orlando Magic, I only cover as part of my overall NBA coverage for the league as a whole. So that allows me to keep a little bit of that distance, that stay away from being a fan. And it's, there are times when I miss being a fan in the basketball sense of one team and being, you know, super wrapped up in it and all that, but I love the game, so I get enough of that through that. And then my fandom comes through other sports that I don't cover for a living, where I feel like maybe it's a little more appropriate or easy to do, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, you can throw the fan hat on for, you know, for a little bit watching some baseball or some football, right?
100%. Yeah, that's what I do. Most of my fandom comes through now when I am watching either New England Patriots, who's the team I grew up with, or the Boston College Eagles. That's where I went to school. They're unfortunately not very good, so I've kind of given up on them a little bit. And then most of all, it comes out when I'm watching my daughter's team. I'm that dad on the sideline. There was like, that guy needs to shut his mouth.
So you're absolutely a girl dad, right?
Oh, there we go. 100%. Yes, 100%. I'm a girl dad. She is my she's my favorite athlete. Any team she's on is my favorite team. And when I say, people say I need to shut my mouth, I'm not critical of the girls in that. I'm just loud on the sidelines. I have a lot to say, and I tend to say it quite loudly.
Hey, we completely support that here, all this wholesome content at Locked On Rockets. Now, I do have to ask, have you ever been on another Locked On program, or is this your first time?
No, I have been. I've done with Phil Rossman Reich of Orlando Magic Daily and Locked On Magic. I've done his show a handful of times. I had been on Locked On Celtics with John Corrales before, and then one other, and I can't remember now off the top of my head. Might have been Locked On Thunder, perhaps, but eventually you do enough podcasts, they all kind of run together.
That's very true. You know, you it becomes a little bit hard to differentiate one from another, and then you just start, you know, if eventually when you get to, you know, a point, somebody of your stature, you know, covering the league, then, you know, you got everybody hitting you up in your email and saying, hey, can you come on the show? Can you do this radio? Can you do this call in? I'm sure you get hit up every single day for people like me who want to bring you on the show.
You know what's funny is, and sorry to interrupt you, but that does happen on a regular basis. But one of the things that I said to good friends of mine, a couple of whom who don't really follow or care much about the NBA, is I explained to them, if I ever stop thinking it's cool that someone wants to talk to me about the game of basketball, like that's when they have free reign to go ahead and you know, give me a smack across the face to, you know, kind of bring me back to reality of like, this is pretty cool what we get to do. So that's I never ever feel at any point like, you know what, this isn't really what I, you know, I don't want to do that there. And I also remember how much it meant to me as I was getting going in this when one of the bigger name people, and I'm far from one of the bigger names, but when one of them would reach out to me or would say something kind or would give me time to talk or would, you know, I've had a podcast that's kind of floated in and out, and if they would come on my show, how much that meant to me. So I've always kind of said, you know what, I can't necessarily pay those folks back, but I'm going to pay it forward in a big, big way.
And we will continue our conversation with Keith in just one moment, but first, a quick word from our friends over at Blinkist. All right, guys, let me tell you about one of the most useful apps on my phone. So it's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn when you don't have free time, and you know that means you can't work on personal development, and there's actually an app that kind of solves that problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. So Blinkist is pretty unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and actually condenses it down into just 15 minutes that you can read or even listen to. You know, successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you and me who want to get to the main points of a book quickly so that you can start using that information right away. With its audio feature, Blinkist actually makes it easy to finish a book during your morning commute, your lunch break, or even while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive growing library, different categories from self-help to business to just health, history books. You name it, they've probably got it. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had the time to. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to this massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. You can go to Blinkist.com/MBA to try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off of your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/MBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/MBA. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, where we will continue the conversation that I had with Keith Smith right now. Hey, well, I appreciate it because, you know, as you say that, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I just took over this podcast earlier this season from Ben DuBose, who used to be the host. And, you know, it's happened. I'm getting, you know, the radio calls and, hey, can you do a segment? We want to talk about the Rockets, you know, over here at SB Nation Radio, or, you know, this radio station randomly from like the middle of Oklahoma that wanted to like have me on the show. And I was like, OK, cool. Like, sure, we'll talk Rockets. But last thing that I want to cover just about you personally before we kind of move into some of our Rockets topics and then NBA topics as a whole is, if you had to kind of narrow it down to, you know, one moment, I know this is going to be hard, but do you have like a specific memory, like your favorite moment covering the league from your time spent covering the NBA?
Yeah, for now it is. So I live in Orlando, so the Magic is the team I'm around the most. And ever since I started this, they haven't been very good. So being in the building for playoff games last year, the games 3 and 4, that first round series with the Raptors, it was just so cool. It was such a different environment. The building was completely full. It was rocking. The fans were loud. They were super into it. If you remember, Orlando had won Game 1. So it came back to Orlando, tied 1-1. For that Game 3, and the Raptors ultimately ended up winning the series 4-1, but it was so great to be there. That's by far and away my favorite big moment. And then a smaller moment, but really cool to me, is I love being at NBA Summer League in Las Vegas. I go every year, and so it's not one specific moment, but any time I spend at Summer League, because it's just such a casual, laid back environment. You can talk to everybody in the league is there. So you can talk to everybody there. And then the interaction with the fans is so neat, because you're just, you know, you're all there in the concourse together and people coming up. And again, kind of going back to that moment of like, it never isn't cool to have somebody come up and be like, hey, you're Keith Smith, I read your stuff, and you know, that, like, that's just the coolest thing in the world to me. So those two things, but for a specific moment, game three of that Magic Raptors series last year was just the coolest experience I've had covering the game.
All right, cool. So, and I do remember that series. That series, what, you know, even though it ultimately ended poorly for the Magic, you know, that, you know, the fact that they did kind of come back to Orlando 1-1, you know, everybody was a little bit concerned what was going to happen, but, you know, we all know how that played out. So moving things over kind of to a bit more of a Rockets scope, Rockets lens. So I think, you know, in a summer that was full of player movement and trades and just, you know, really the league kind of reshaping itself before this past season started, one of the biggest trades was obviously Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook and, you know, reuniting James Harden and Russell Westbrook here in Houston. Do you remember, you know, some of your immediate reactions to that trade and kind of how you thought it was going to pan out?
Yeah, I can remember everything about that whole period. I was actually with Chris Haynes when he broke that Kawhi Leonard was going to the Clippers. I was actually in the car with him when he was getting all that information. That was the same night, if you remember, there was the earthquake in California that was felt in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So we all, like, he closed my laptop and said, we got to go. And like started like throwing me my backpack. And like, we, you know, ran out of the gym. We shared I think it was a Lyft or Uber back to the hotel, and he was getting all that detail. So I remember that. Then was pretty quickly after Paul George is being traded. And then shortly thereafter that it was Russell Westbrook for Chris Paul. So my immediate reaction was much like everybody else's: what is happening? Like, this is so crazy that all this happened in such rapid fashion. And that was after, you know, you had the Anthony Davis trade and Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you know, moving on, all those things happening so much. So that was my first like reaction. And then once I really thought about the basketball piece, I got into a lot where everybody else went to, I think, of Russ and James Harden together again. Okay, you know, they were teammates in OKC and, you know, took that team to the best heights it's been to yet with getting to an NBA Finals. And I liked the idea of, all right, get off of that year, Chris Paul, if you can. It looked like maybe Chris Paul was slowing down a little bit. And then it just turned into all the questions of, wow, Russ has been a ball-dominant guy. Harden's been a ball-dominant guy. How's that going to work? What is all that? And then, you know, much like everybody else, all right, now I just can't wait to see this all come together on court.
So now that we're, you know, kind of basically, well, what, 64 games into the season, Rockets are sitting at 40-24. We don't know when basketball is going to resume, unfortunately, but up to this point, you know, of the games that you have caught, you know, what have you liked? What are some of the dynamics between Harden and Russ, or just, you know, the team as a whole that you've enjoyed seeing this season?
Yeah, there's two parts. I'll do the Harden and Russ part first, and then the separate just for the team as a whole. I really enjoy with the two of them is, as a defense, you have very little possessions off. There was always, if I go back a couple years with James Harden and the Rockets, even with Chris Paul, there was always a little bit of that time where you could tell Harden was in, you know, maybe minute 40, and he had already taken a whole bunch of shots and drives to the paint and gotten fouled. And you could tell I'm just going to give the ball up for a possession or two here and kind of, you know, sit back and watch. I'll spot up, and if they need me, I'm here with 5 seconds left, but I just need a little bit of a break. I like to call that snagging in-game rest. And then once they added Westbrook, you didn't have that, because with Westbrook, if you get – you rest or you get lackadaisical for a second, he's putting the ball on the deck and going right by you, and he's going to explode to the rim and make plays. And I think the way too, they got him to, you know what, be that guy who attacks, get back on the attack, go to the rim, instead of pulling up for jumpers and all those other things. That was really cool to see those two guys kind of come together and make that work. And that's something that I've enjoyed. And then on the flip side, I love, you know, I know a lot of people killed. They've gone small and they're just shooting a million threes. And I hate this. This is, you know, boring basketball. I loved it because I like when teams are different. One of the things I like about college football sometimes is you might have a team that runs a triple option going against a team that runs the spread, you know, and throws it 60 times a game versus a team that runs it 60 times a game. Well, I like in basketball when teams get different and they don't all look the same. So I liked that they were super small and they were going to play true five-out basketball with no one really hanging out inside at all or anything like that. So that's something that I really enjoyed. Those two things were the two things kind of the natural progression of Russ and Harden's partnership, and then really over the last month or two, the way the Rockets have kind of transformed themselves as a team.
Final segment of part one with Keith Smith coming up here in just one moment, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Wrapping up our conversation with Keith Smith, here we go. And, you know, that transformation, well, first I will comment, you know, the whole Russ kind of, you know, adjusting his game to better benefit the Rockets. It did take some time because there was this kind of push, I think, for the early part of the season, you know, around November, December-ish, where he was taking an increased volume of three-pointers, where he was being encouraged, you know, actively by the coaching staff, by his teammates to shoot wide-open three-pointers. And then I don't know where the directive came from, whether it was, you know, up top from Daryl Morey, whether it was MDA, whether Russ realized it himself, but it just wasn't working out. He was shooting, you know, 22, 23% from behind the arc. And then it was around that January 1st mark that he took a noticeable, his three-point attempts took a noticeable dive. He had this, you know, renewed focus on driving to the rim, making the most of what he was good at in a Rockets jersey, or just, you know, what he's been good at his entire career, which is being explosive, being that guy that can get to the cup at will. And, you know, seeing him have that evolution was pretty impressive. And, you know, I think that's been one of the underrated storylines of the Rockets season. But, you know, going back to what you said about, you know, committing to small ball, trading away Capella midseason, you know, getting back Robert Covington and committing to this, you know, really unique brand of basketball, which we've seen a lot of national media critics take shots at the Rockets about this. And I'm not really sure why, because like you said, it is new, it's engaging, it's creative. And at the forefront of all this, the guy who kind of instituted this change, the guy who is the reason why the Rockets are playing small ball now, is because of Mike D'Antoni. And at least here in Houston and, you know, from the Rockets fandom, MDA catches a lot of flack. What do you think about MDA just as a coach?
Yeah, it's funny. I've gone kind of both ends of the spectrum on him. When he started with the Suns and remember how they were this super fast paced team, and now they'd be
7 seconds or less. Yeah.
Right. And they'd be amongst the slowest paced teams now, the way they played. It's just kind of funny how the game itself has evolved. But to think of that team, I was a little like, wow, you know, they're playing fast. I don't understand this. And then that's when he really started the small ball stuff. That's where everybody basically, except for Steve Nash, played up a position from where they had previously played. And that was really one of the things where it was like, huh, this is kind of interesting. I don't know if this will work. And then it did. And they were, you know, maybe one of the better teams that never made a finals of the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years or so. I probably just opened a whole can of worms there because I didn't really think it all the way through. But that's, you know, probably fair, I think. So to think about that way there. And then I think when he first got to Houston, I was very down on him the last, let's call it, year or two, because I was like, I've seen this story. It's run a million plays for James Harden. He plays a million minutes a season, and then he's going to be worn down by the time we get to April and May. And is he going to have enough left? And there's not enough around him. If he doesn't have enough left, what are we doing? And then obviously Chris Paul was there, and they were, you know, really his injury, a bad shooting game away from potentially making the NBA Finals. And that's where I feel like, all right, this guy's taking a lot of grief, but clearly he can coach. And I love the fact that this late in his career, I think in a situation where it was, you know what, I'm out anyway. If this doesn't go well, I'm going down the way I want to play. And I think that was the coolest thing. And then I think Daryl Morey saying, you know what, I'm in with you. If you're going to do this anyway, let's do it then. Let's really do this and get the right pieces. And I think that kind of connection between the two has been really good. And I think that's what enabled the Rockets to go from, quite frankly, if we did this conversation in, let's say, December, I would be like, I don't really like watching the team. I found them to be very boring. And that was even with Russ and Harden, because I felt like it was your turn, my turn, and we don't really do anything but run a million pick and rolls every game, and that's where it is. And Capella's, you know, he's good, but whatever. And now I find them far more interesting. I find them a lot more compelling because, again, to go back to what I said, they're just very different. And I think that's, you know, the NBA needs more of that. You need more teams that are different and that makes their style and game fun to watch.
You know, you mentioned the number of pick and rolls that they would run while they still had Capella on the roster. And this is kind of a point that I've been hammering home a little bit, and I want to get your take on it. I still haven't completely bought into the idea that going five out, the small ball, all the space, while it remains optimal for Russell Westbrook, I'm not 100% sure it's the best thing for James Harden. So in the games that you've watched, you know, I guess pre-trade and now post-trade, have you noticed a difference in James Harden's play, or is this just my eyes playing tricks on me?
No, I've definitely noticed it as him as a playmaker passer. And I think that leads into what you were going to. I think what happens is he had become really one of the elite pick and roll passers in the league. And a lot of that was to Capella, whether it was lobs for dunks or just getting him the ball in the right spot at the wing. Now it's more about break it down and then kick it out. Or, you know, what he would do there was when teams would eventually, when they still had Capella and Capella was healthy and playing well, was Harden would run the pick and roll. He'd draw the man. You come over to help. And then that's where he's finding guys on the weak side for shots and those kind of things. Now it's more about, it's more dribble drive type game. And it reminds me a little bit of a college type offense where it's, you know, you're playing truly five out and you're just break a guy down and then, can, you know, drive and kick basketball. And I don't think that's where he is necessarily the best use of his skills. Clearly, it allows him, it opens up, just like it opens up the floor for Westbrook, it opens up the floor for Harden to be able to drive and score himself. But as a playmaker, he's definitely a different guy.
And, you know, even though this isn't, so this is a completely, unfortunately, this is a completely different team than what, you know, the Rockets started the season with. Obviously, the huge shakeup in the middle of the season, dealing Capella, receiving Robert Covington, and committing fully to small ball. So in the small sample size of, you know, small ball that we did get to witness before the league was put on, you know, coronavirus hiatus, how have you felt about this team's chances moving forward now that they've, like you said, you know, top down, you know, with Daryl Morey, MDA, all in agreement, Harden and Russ seem to be on the same page about how the team wants to play. How do you like this team's chances moving forward?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't love them. My reasoning behind that is I think I'm always in favor of if you're going to do something, commit fully. Don't take half measures, because then you're never going to find out. You're never going to know. And you're always going to leave yourself a little bit with the, well, had we done this, we might have become, you know, X, Y, or Z. So I am in favor of the fact that they bought in, they did it, and they said, this is a team we're going to be. What worries me most is two things. One is the rebounding. And I think we saw that over the last week or two of games when before the hiatus was that they were starting to get beat up on the glass a little bit. Teams were starting to go to the basket a little bit more, and they were starting to make things happen. And there's two things that worry me with the way they were playing. Was one is you're small, right? And that's the easy one, I think, to see. Everybody knows that. And you have to wonder, can PJ Tucker do it? Sure, PJ Tucker can do it because that guy's one of the toughest guys around. But then you're asking everybody else to play that much bigger as well. You're asking everybody else to get in there on the glass. And as you switch and do those things, they all have to hold up, and that's tough. Then the part that I think is a lot less noticeable that I don't think people necessarily pick up on is whether it's injuries or just guys Mike D'Antoni shortened his rotation down. He's only playing eight or nine guys, you know, and those eight or nine guys are going to carry pretty heavy minutes load. Now that goes all the way back. That's how he played with the Suns. It was small, and we're only going to play eight, nine guys. When he has been at his best, he's played short rotations and asked a lot of his players. But what I worry about is when you're doing both, that's a lot. That takes a lot out of guys. And it almost becomes that question of, instead of it being the question of, is James Harden going to have enough left in April and May come playoff time? Is the entire roster going to have enough left? Because it's one thing to play small. It's one thing to play a very short rotation. To do both, that's just really grueling and straining on players, which is one of the which is why, you know, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here. But if we are looking at maybe the season does restart, the Rockets might be one of those teams that really benefits from this long layoff, because this gets these guys a chance to really get off their feet and rest up and then come back, you know, hopefully a little more rejuvenated and ready to go than they might have been otherwise.
All right, so that's going to do it for part one with Keith Smith. So be on the lookout for part two coming out tomorrow. And if you're not already following him on Twitter, do me a favor, go follow him at KeithSmithNBA. He produces a lot of amazing content. He's, you know, popping up on radio and podcasts all over the place. So, you know, if you exclusively listen to podcasts and you don't really check out digital content, then you'll still find him occasionally. So go follow him on Twitter and be on the lookout for part two of our conversation with Keith Smith coming out tomorrow. So for now, I think that's where we'll wrap things up. As always, thank you all so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.